Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
And it is the Brett Winterbull Show, News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT. Thrilled to be here today in the swamp, Washington, D.C. We got together, me and my fellow talk show hosts from across the country have all descended here into Washington, D.C. to shine a light on this battle regarding illegal immigration, border insecurity, you name it. And I'm thrilled to welcome to the program. We visited with him in the past, and I'm happy to have him back now. Dan Stein, who is the president of the Federation for American Immigration Reform, joins us now here. Good to have you here, Dan.
Nice to be here, Brett. Beautiful weather.
It is beautiful. And literally, ladies and gentlemen, we're about two football fields away from that Capitol Dome, I would say. They're fighting over that $3.5 trillion monstrosity, Dan. But in there is money for amnesty. There's amnesty dollars in there and open border dollars. Even President Obama came out today and said, you can't have an open border, President Biden. What do we make of this?
Well, the good news that just broke is that the parliamentarian at the Senate parliamentarian, has again ruled against the Democrat effort to jam an amnesty in the budget reconciliation bill. So that's like they're two out of two so far in terms of not getting it in. And now, unless they overrule her, but that's good news. Now, look, I mean, Biden, if he really wanted to actually legislate in a balanced way and, you know, some enforcement and maybe certain kinds of provisions to adjust some people, he would have gotten the borders under control. But that's not what he did. Guy in office 50 years, smart enough to know better. What does he do? Repeats the mistakes of the past, sends the wrong signal, dismantles everything Trump did, reverses key policies, pulls the rug out from under the Northern Triangle countries in Mexico that were cooperating with Trump,
right,
and sends this message and says, this is how you're going to get in. They all got cell phones now. This is what you say. Cartels coach them. And he's also populated his administration with people who are ideologically opposed to borders. They're not like professional immigration people. They're people who live to blow through our borders. And they're trying to destroy the agencies that are designed to do it and amplify these crazy narratives. Now, the Border Patrol, they've been using horses for since their founding.
Absolutely.
1923 or so. Suddenly they can't use horses anymore because of a phony narrative about using reins that they claimed were with. The whole thing is...
It was nuts.
So, I mean, the credibility's gone. Biden either is incompetent, corrupt, or so incognitively impaired, doesn't understand the consequences of what he's doing.
Right.
No country, even Obama, this is like, he's not exactly a centrist.
Right.
Says a country can't survive with open borders or no borders. And yet Biden has no plan.
That's
right. I mean, his execution is like the Afghanistan withdrawal.
Right.
This is like ready, shoot, aim.
That's right.
He's got a guy named Mayorkas, who's a professional liar, raised on Goebbels' knee, doesn't tell you the truth, propaganda artist. And what they're basically saying is everybody can come into the country, make a phony asylum claim without limit by the millions.
Right.
Give them 60 days to report to ICE, which they won't. And if they do report to ICE, then they get a court date 5, 7, 10 years down the line. And then they can appeal forever. So effectively, it's like he's running his own immigration program. No wonder they keep coming.
One of the things that strikes me, I grew up in West Texas, grew up in El Paso, Texas, right across from Juarez. And one of the things that strikes me is this is the fifth or the sixth hold their feet to the fire that I have attended in person. This is no longer an issue where it's over there. Over there is in every community. Now, whether it's fentanyl, human trafficking, criminal gangs, or just, you know, quality of life issues, this is an unbelievable amount of energy that you guys have harnessed here to try to raise the alarm around the country. I'm looking at KBC over here. I'm looking at Nashville. I'm looking at our good friend Ken Matthews over at WHB. I mean, people are engaged in this like nothing else.
Well, we've seen a steady increase in public awareness and understanding of this issue from the 70s forward. There was no reason for people to focus on immigration in the 70s, 80s.
Right.
It was kind of an inside the beltway deal. But now, year after year, Trump elevated public awareness and understanding. Biden obviously coming in, taking a sledgehammer. People see the results. People get it. They're engaged. Independents, Republicans, you see the polling. Biden's, he's not going to get reelected. No way, because of primarily this issue, but a few others as well. And the Democrats are going to get a bloodbath in 22 over this issue. And yet, they're so committed to this one-party dictatorship idea that if they can change the voting patterns and prolong COVID, and if they can continue to bring in immigrants at the rate they do, they believe that they can, instead of assimilation, they want to assimilate them into welfare. And they want to convince them they don't have to really learn about American history, traditions, customs, or ideas, but instead keep their own language, keep their own cultures, because they want them to become as subservient to the Democratic Party politically as the African-American voters have been to the Democrats.
And you're starting, and you're starting to see a break there, especially with Latino voters coming out of the West. I mean, we're starting to see a fracturing there.
That's the key. Democrats will not come to the table to deal on this issue until they realize Hispanic voters are not going to vote like African Americans.
But the other challenge is this, that you've got a situation, Dan, where we all want immigrants to come into the country, but you have to do it properly. You fill out the paperwork, you pay your fine, you pay your fees, you do the things you have to do. It's this explosion at the border. We got another 30,000 down in Tapachula right now in Mexico, getting ready to come back up. Does Biden get religion at any stage of the game here? I mean, does he?
Well, look, there's only three questions in immigration policy. Who are you going to admit?
Right.
How many?
Mm-hmm.
And how do you enforce the rules? Mm-hmm. If you can't enforce the rules, the first two,
right,
basically the American people don't get any say in the policy after that.
Right.
So if it breaks down, mm-hmm, now politically, if it's to your advantage to see anarchy and breakdown, that's apparently what you're going to let happen. And that's what they've done. Immigration can only serve this country if it's properly regulated. We select based on our national needs, who we need, mm-hmm, and under proper limits and controls.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot achieve that if the levels of immigration get so high that the administrative apparatus is overwhelmed,
right,
and court hearings go on forever. You have to release them during the pendency of the proceedings. Once you have to release them, or court orders to release them,
right,
then it's all over. They disappear. They have U.S. citizen kids. They get married. They buy houses. And then they turn around and say, let's pass another amnesty.
So a final question for you. Something that's very unique about this is the presence of local law enforcement. You've got sheriffs. I mean, we've got one from Rockingham County right here, very close to our home in Charlotte. The local sheriffs understand like nobody else the challenges here. What about that component? Because that's a huge part of the story.
Well, in terms of the radical left taking over, okay,
right,
the sheriffs are the Alamo. They are the guys right there, public safety in your community.
Mm-hmm.
They are fighting this battle like crazy because you can't look to those big city police officer chiefs. They're all politicized.
Right.
You can't, you know, and a lot of the professionals in the federal government are under the... So the independent sheriffs,
yep,
are a critical, critical voice. Everything about this whole battle now, multinationals and corrupt politicians,
yep,
lying and obfuscating, talk radio, sheriffs, people who've lost loved ones. This movement is about authenticity, sincerity. All your guests have one thing in common. They're honest, they're sincere, they're directly affected, and they just want what's good for America. Nobody's lobbying for the Saudis. Nobody's stuffing money from China in their pockets.
Right.
All the guests during this entire event,
yep,
are here for America.
Dan Stein, great to have you here. Appreciate you hosting us here. We so appreciate you. FairUS.org is the website for more information. Thanks so much. I look forward to catching up with you again tomorrow.
Thanks.
Thanks. That's Dan Stein.
Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT. Brett Witterbull live in Washington, D.C., just across from the nation's capital and for the actual capital itself. And it took coming to Washington, D.C. to catch up with somebody whose work I know you're going to greatly admire, Sergeant Richard Valdemar, who is a retired sergeant from the County of Los Angeles Sheriff's Department. Thank you so much for your service, sir, and making time for us today on the show in Charlotte.
Thank you, Brett.
You were a sheriff there in L.A. from 1970 until when?
2004.
So you've seen a lot.
Yes, and I retired actually from the federal FBI task force, Metropolitan Task Force, which is a bunch of jurisdictions that all get together to work the gangs. And I worked Marcel Trucha and the Mexican Mafia and those groups.
So you understand the byproducts of so much of what's happening with an open border, with the security issues that come through here. On a level of 1 to 10, your level of concern with these transnational gangs that are now operating, not just in L.A., but around the country.
Yes, they're real bad now. You know, I mean, they were always bad, but now they're an international syndicate, I would say. They're in in league with, I call it the Unholy Trinity, American street gangs, Mexican drug cartels, and jihadists. And the a lot of the radical groups from the Middle East derive their money for their bank from the sale of narcotics. Afghanistan's not only famous for, you know, weapons and stuff.
Right.
It's also famous for opium, marijuana. In fact, the most popular one in the street when I retired was known as Afghanistan.
Wow. That's unbelievable. The thing is, and you heard some of the byproduct of policing taking place here in D.C. as we speak in real time. But when you look at this unholy alliance that has formed between the street gangs, terrorists, and people like that, people need to understand that when you have smuggling routes, they're just like railroads. You can put people, you can put weapons, you can put terrorists, you can put drugs, all on those highways and on those roads.
Absolutely.
And so to have our border as unprotected as it is means that you're going to get more bad guys through.
We have an open door for that pipeline to come through. And, you know, it's not just drugs. It's the human trafficking side of it. And then the cartels establish their gang control over various parts of the city. And pretty soon, oh, and then they make $100 billion a year.
$100
billion. From drug and human trafficking, and 60% of their income goes to bribery.
Of public officials and...
Yeah. Not in Mexico.
Unbelievable.
Because they already own Mexico.
Right.
So our people on this side of the border are getting... and it's not like somebody gives you $50.
Right.
You know,
right.
This is some high-ranking individual who has some control is getting a large amount of money. And they're saying there is plata o plomo. You can have our silver or our lead.
Right.
So if you don't do it, you're going to die.
Is it an insurgency? Is it fair to say that what we're dealing with is an insurgency on the streets right now? Are they trying to take over neighborhoods? Are they trying to control cities?
Yes, they have. Yeah. And they have a history of that from way back in the 80s when I was around. Some of the cities in Los Angeles, like Cudahy, Maywood, Bell, Huntington Park, that's southeast part of Los Angeles, are basically taken over by the cartel.
So we're sitting here. I'm broadcasting live into Charlotte. We do a show in Charlotte every single day. The tentacles go everywhere. It's important for people to understand that, right? This is not a border issue. It's not the Southwest.
Yeah, Los Angeles is a long way from the border.
That's right.
San Francisco is a long way from the border.
Right.
But they control that area. I did a ride-along with one of my my best friend's kid, who's a patrol officer in Virginia. I asked him about the cartel activity. He said, "We don't have any cartel activity." I said, "Take us to the Mexican restaurant." So he took us to a local Mexican restaurant. First of all, it was a storefront, and inside they sold all the clothing that a drug cartel guy would wear. Mm-hmm. You know, the Stetson hat, the heavy stitched belt, the real expensive boots. This is not construction workers' clothing.
Uh-huh.
This is very expensive. And then you go into the restaurant area, and over the seats, fixed in places of honor, were all the drug saints.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Jesus Malverde, you know, Santa Muerte. These are saints they worship that are in the occult.
Yep.
And the gangs and the cartels, you know, pray to them.
Fentanyl has become an epidemic in our country. We know the cartels are mixing it. We know they're getting precursors from China. This is a worldwide phenomenon. Our enemies are exploiting this to take us down.
Exactly. China, Russia, and the drug cartels in South America are all exploiting our huge appetite for illegal drugs. And now even legal drugs, because the DEA just put out a report that almost all the drugs that you can buy over the internet is all laced with fentanyl.
Can you stick around for one more segment on the show here? Because I want to dive into some of the notions of policing and how it is that this can be handled. Because we're living in the era of defund. You never had defund back in the 70s or the 80s? We got defund right now, Sergeant.
Things were so bad, it's like they called in the cowboys to clean up the city of Tombstone.
Uh-huh.
You know,
uh-huh.
And they wanted it cleaned up, and we cleaned it up.
So we got a totally different situation now. And the very fact that we're seeing all these sheriffs, all these police officers turning in their badges and looking for greener pastures. This is an epidemic, I think. And let's continue the conversation straight ahead. He is Sergeant Richard Valdemar. Did a lot of time there in the L.A. Sheriff's Department. Has seen it all. In fact, I'm going to get him to tell us something interesting about Michael Jackson. News Talk 1110 at 99.3 WBT. It is the Brett Witterbull Show. Continue our conversation with Sergeant Richard Valdemar, retired L.A. County Sheriff's Department. And now you've also done other things in addition to the L.A. County Sheriff's Department. You've been active in the gang.
Arizona Gang Task Force. Which is a state gang task force. Again, using local and Arizona troopers to fight gangs.
And you're seeing that same sort of stuff out of Texas with DPS and sheriffs and other communities as well. Here we go, more professionals coming through. Sarge, let me ask you this question, because you never really had, might have had liberal judges or liberal district attorneys over time, but now you've got an institutionalized situation where we're defunding the cops. We're going to defund the drug units. We're going to defund crack.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
We're going to defund all these units that go out there and try to interdict on the streets. What's the end game there?
Yes, before we had some liberals, but now we have actually enemies within the district attorney's office and the state government that are completely against law enforcement. And they justified saying that they're being kind to minorities who have been mistreated over the years.
Right.
That's not what's happening. They're deassembling all the hard work that over the years we were able to do and bring down the murder and crime rate. So they're not for us. They're against us.
And those communities are the very ones that get victimized when you depolice, right?
And who do you think is the victim? Blacks kill blacks, Asians kill Asians, whites kill whites, and Hispanics kill Hispanics.
Yeah.
95% of our wanted people for murder in Los Angeles are Mexican nationals.
Nationals?
Yes, because we can't, they send somebody up from Juarez to go hit somebody in Los Angeles, then he returns. We might have a nickname for him,
right,
and a description, but we're not going to go into Juarez to try to get him.
Right.
And we're not getting cooperation from the Mexican, although we're starting to see some cooperation.
You are starting to see that.
We invite them. I belong to the International Latino Gang Investigators Association. Mm-hmm. We invite the South American and Central American cops into our conferences. People say, well, you're training the enemy. No, you're not. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of honest cops down there who are trying to do the right thing.
Right.
It's not their fault they get put in those circumstances where they have to think about the safety of their family, over their... It's not them. It's their families that they worry about.
And you've got, obviously, issues with corruption, but you've got it on our side, too. It's on both sides of the border.
We're blind if we think that we don't have corruption on our side. I had somebody tell me, yeah, Stevie Wonder can tell that.
So if I made you king for the day, okay, and I said, what are a couple things that we need to do? What are a couple of things that we need to do, either as people in law enforcement or as citizens and residents and taxpayers? What do we got to do?
First of all, support the police and refund whatever you defunded. Mm-hmm. Get rid of the politicians that are the open enemies of law enforcement. Get DAs that will prosecute everything and not deal everything away. They're releasing all these people saying they're nonviolent criminals. Well, what happens is they're a violent criminal who pleads down to his possession of drugs. Mm-hmm. So in the eyes of the government, when he's released, he's a nonviolent. He's not. He was involved in a drive-by shooting or
right,
a fight or whatever. And so he is violent, but because he pled down, same thing for child abusers. Mm-hmm. They plead down to the lesser charges, and the DAs just take that.
And human trafficking is obviously a huge issue. There are people who disappear every single day
off
our streets.
It was one of the things that Northern California gangs, they did some prostitution rings and stuff like that. Southern California gangs didn't do that. That was unmanly. Mm-hmm. Now they are.
Yeah.
Because human trafficking produces so much money.
Yeah. It's a heartbreaking situation all the way around, Sergeant Richard Valdemar. All right, I got to pay off on this thing. So once upon a time, you were in L.A.
Yes.
And you were working You were working in your business there in the sheriff's department, and a guy named Michael Jackson was going to shoot a music video. And what was that music video?
That music video was Beat It.
Uh-huh.
And he went to LAPD originally, and he asked for them to get some gang members to participate in the making of the movie or the video, and they refused. They said, we don't deal with gang members. Then he came to the sheriff, and Sheriff Block said, yes, we will. And so he got me and Ed Dvorak, another sergeant with the OSS gang team.
Uh-huh.
And we put together these gang members, and we put them on a bus. And that was difficult because the Hispanic and the blacks did not get along at that time.
Right.
So we put them on buses. We took them to downtown. We filmed during the in Skid Row
yeah.
during the early morning hours, you know, 3, 4, 5 in the morning. And they did it for us. At one point, they were going to kill Michael Jackson. They're going, oh, they don't like him because he's a feminine.
Yeah.
And they started hearing the talk about him being a child molester. So they were going to, the black yeah. gang members were going to kill him for East Coast Crips, a big guy named Big Ant.
Wow.
And so I said, hey, aren't we getting paid? He goes, yeah. I said, why don't you kill him after we get paid?
Oh, jeez.
But you got to talk there.
Yeah, you got to talk the way they talk.
The
right?
way they talk. And so we each got $50 a night, and mm-hmm. we got, not me, the gang members.
Yeah.
And they got a signed Michael Jackson a Thriller album.
Holy cow.
You know how much that's worth now?
That's worth a lot.
Yeah.
It's more than $50.
Yeah, I'm not sure they all have it. I don't know
true.
If they could take it to their jail cells.
Sergeant Richard Valdemar. Look, it just goes to show that the City of Angels, you've got angels and you got devils and you got show business, and that's the great unifier.
That's very good.
I appreciate you coming out here today and joining us in Charlotte.
Thank you, Britt.
Thanks so much.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
Oh, yeah, you know what that means. You know that. That means the Stones are in town tomorrow night. What a great show this is going to be. The Legends, the original, I mean, name me a better band. Name me a bigger band than the Rolling Stones. I bet you can name 10 Stones songs just off the top of your head. I bet you're doing it right now. I know Boomer's probably doing it. I could probably do 10. I like a lot of them. You know, I like the Sucking in the 70s. I like the Shattered. I like the Emotional Rescue. And you're going to love this. It's going to be an amazing show. It's the first time they're out. Minus Charlie Watts, and they are certainly saluting him. I'm getting amazing reports from some of the performances. You can still get those tickets. Be sure to head on over. Buy them where you buy those tickets. Ticketmaster, etc. Head on over and get them at Bank of America Stadium tomorrow night. It's going to be a raucous, phenomenal show. You know what it's going to be? It's going to be a celebration of life and freedom and liberty, and it's going to be awesome. So be sure to get those tickets. Tell them Brett sent you. You can tell him that Brett sent you. I mean, it's totally easy. It's totally legit. I am Brett Witterbolt. We are live, and I'm going to, at the top of the next hour, I'm going to post some pictures just so you all can see this view that I have. I've got a $3.5 trillion view right now, a $3.5 trillion view, because I'm looking at the Capitol, and Fancy Nancy is not getting it done there at the Capitol. She's not able to deliver the goods. And you heard from Dan Stein in the beginning of the show. Dan Stein's a president of FAIR, and I'm in D.C. today covering the Federation for American Immigration Reform event. We are live on the radio row catching up with folks, as no doubt you've heard. We had Dan Stein on, and we had Richard Valdemar on. We've got amazing guests who are going to be joining us in the 5 o'clock hour as well. Don't worry, we'll be hooking up with Bo Thompson and Mark Garrison and getting you up to date on everything with Charlotte at 6. But I'm looking here at this Capitol Dome, and it is just, it's beautiful in the late afternoon sun as it's glistening there, and they are not able to pull this thing off, folks. They can't do it. In fact, I'm looking at the building and I'm thinking, wow, just a little while ago, there were fireworks there in that building when Matt Gaetz was asking Milley and Austin questions about the pullout of Afghanistan. Pelosi's trying to pull this thing together, stitch this thing together to try to produce the thing that Bernie Sanders wants the most, which is a $5 trillion plan, a $5 trillion spending plan that, of course, the president of the United States has made abundantly clear will cost nothing. It's zero is the cost. Zero. Now, Now, the reporting, the most recent reporting coming out is that Pelosi has defused the debt standoff with centrists and is now turning to the rest of crises. This is the reporting coming out from Nicholas Wu earlier this afternoon. Speaker Pelosi tore into moderate Democrats opposed to a debt ceiling increase as the House prepared to vote Wednesday on one of several high-stakes standoffs bedeviling her caucus this week. During the closed-door meeting Wednesday morning, a furious Pelosi, can you imagine what a furious Pelosi is like? Chided roughly a half a dozen moderates. It's the moderates that are the problem, right? It's the moderates. The moderates are the problem in her party. Why are there any moderates left? I'm amazed that they haven't bailed. These members have all voted for this last week, so they're concerned about how it might be in an ad. It's already in an ad, Pelosi said after meeting, noting that she had little patience. Little patience for opposition in her own party. I love when they've got little patience. I think the little patience is the best. President Biden came out last week and told you he's got no more patience with you. No more patience with you not getting the shot. You better get the shot, otherwise you're going to be sorry. And he's got limited patience in that regard. All of this is bubbling up and under the current and under the, you know, this. And the reality is they don't understand that what really matters to you is being able to run your business, being able to send your kids to school, being able to manage your business, to mind your own business, and not the monkey business that Nancy Pelosi wants to try to push around there, where she's trying to satisfy all these disparate groups who are looking to claim another piece of the pie out of your paycheck and tell you that it's not really going to cost anything. And I want to certainly invite you to be a part of the conversation here, because this is not like sometimes you have with the Radio Rows where, you know, people don't take any calls. I am taking calls at 704-570-1110. Everything is fair game. The Millie testimony, the Austin testimony, the McKenzie testimony, the border fight that's taking place, the security issues that are out there. And let me just put an important point on this, because one of the things that you have seen from the Democrats in these last months and really for the last year and a half is this push to defund the police. In the wake of George Floyd's killing, of his murder, of his death. Well, what if I told you that there was a huge bust, a fentanyl bust, and I've been talking about fentanyl this week and late last week. Huge fentanyl bust in Mint Hill. Police said they seized more than 52,000 fentanyl pills worth $1.5 million along with marijuana and guns after shots were fired into a home in Mint Hill on Monday. Just before noon on Monday, police say multiple 911 callers reported shots fired on Pine Hill Road. Upon arrival, officers found the targeted home, which was occupied at the time of the incident, without any reported injury. But police said their initial investigation found no reason to believe that this was a random act of targeted violence. No, no, nay, nay, wrong, wrong. As a result of an execution of a search warrant, Mint Hill police reported seizing a total of 3.44 pounds of fentanyl. That's 52,066 illegal fentanyl pills with an estimated street value of $1.5 million. Think about that. Think about the carnage. Think about the death, the destruction. In the wake of that kind of poison going into the bodies of children and men and women. Imagine that, ladies and gentlemen. Imagine what that looks like. How many funerals were avoided by busting that amount? And how many will still be carried out because so much more is still swimming on our streets? You heard Richard Valdemar. You heard what he said about the drug trade and how it's everywhere. There is no more safe haven. It's about protecting our families. It's about protecting our kids. Our phone number, 704-570-1110. We'll get into this Millie testimony, and I'm going to let you hear what Matt Gaetz did. He put on quite a spectacular show earlier today at the Congress. 704-570-1110. I'm Brett Witterbull, live in Washington, D.C., at the Capitol.
Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
It is the Brett Winterbull Show, News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT, live in the nation's capital. It is the swamp. It's a beautiful day, but it is the swamp. We have to remember this, folks. It is an incredible opportunity I've had to come up here to Washington, D.C. to be a part of this fair, hold their feet to the fire gathering where we're talking about a lot of stuff involving immigration, national security, you name it. It's all on the table. I was just in the last few minutes spending time with Ken Matthews, that you all know so well from his days as a fill-in and as a guide host, like I was on the Rush Limbaugh show. We were just conversating. We'll see if we can somehow cross the streams at some point. Maybe we'll just figure out how to chat with each other on the show. It is good to be here. One of the things that happened earlier today, though, was fireworks. You know, the fireworks, they don't all just happen on the 4th of July or after NASCAR races. Fireworks will also break out in congressional hearings. There is a congressman, you may know him, Matt Gaetz from Florida. He had an opportunity to take a big swing at General Milley, at Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin. He didn't really go after McKenzie too badly, but boy, he went after Milley and Austin something fierce. I want you to hear it. I'm going to let you hear it in its entirety and uninterrupted. Let her rip, TJ.
Early, and they're not going. February 26, 2020, House Armed Services Committee, General Mark Milley. We know we're not going to defeat the Taliban militarily, and they're not going to defeat the government of Afghanistan militarily. You really blew that call, didn't you, General?
I believe that that was a issue of strategic stalemate, and that if we had remained in Afghanistan with the advisory levels of effort, then the government of Afghanistan...
Well, that's an interesting Afghan answer to a question. It's just not one I asked. You spent more time with Bob Woodward on this book than you spent analyzing the very likely prospect that the Afghanistan government was going to fall immediately to the Taliban, didn't you?
Not even close, Congressman.
Oh, really? Because you said right after Kabul fell that no one could have anticipated the immediate fall of the Ghani government. When did you become aware that Joe Biden tried to get Ghani to lie about the conditions in Afghanistan? He did that in July. Did you know that right away?
I'm not aware of what President Biden...
You're not aware of the phone call that Biden had with Ghani where he said, whether it is true or not, we want you to go out there and paint a rosy picture of what's going on in Afghanistan. You're the chief military advisor to the president. You said that the Taliban was not going to defeat the government of Afghanistan militarily, which, by the way, they cut through him like a hot knife through butter. And then the president tries to get Ghani to lie. When did you become aware of that attempt?
Well, there's two things there, Congressman, if I may. One is what I said was the situation was stalemate. And if we kept advisors with there, the government of Afghanistan and the army would have still been there. That's what I said. Whether that's right or wrong, I don't know. But
it seems wrong now with
well,
the Taliban
we went through all the
question
we
for Secretary
all the
Austin. Secretary Austin, are you capable of assessing whether another has the will to fight?
No, we're not. And that's the point that the chairman made earlier.
So. That's just like an incredibly disappointing thing for the Secretary of Defense to simply say, I can't assess whether someone has the will to fight. But it is consistent with your record. I mean, during the Obama administration, I think they gave you about $48 million to go train up some folks in Syria to go take on the Assad government. And I think your testimony was that only four or five survived first contact with the enemy. So what confidence should this committee have in you or should the country have in you when you've now confessed to us and whether it's the swing and a miss in Afghanistan that General Milley talked to the Senate about yesterday, total failure, or whether it was your failures in Syria, you don't seem capable to look at a fighting force and determine whether or not they have the will.
Well,
is that an embarrassing?
You recall, Congressman, that the end result was the SDF that we stood up that was very, very instrumental in turning the tide of battle up in Syria.
Oh, yeah. Turned it so much. You've got Assad in power in Syria. You got the Taliban in power in Afghanistan. I mean, where have you been?
The focus was ISIS, Congressman. And we and those forces had significant effect on the ISIS network.
It just seems like you're chronically bad at this. And you have admitted that, I guess, which is to your credit. But, you know, when people in the military, like Lieutenant Colonel Stuart Scheller, stand up and demand accountability, when they say that you all screwed up, when they point out that General Milley's statement that the that the government of Afghanistan is not going to get defeated by the Taliban, well, he ends up in the brig. and you all end up in front of us, and your former employer Raytheon ends up with a lot of money, and we have poured cash and blood and credibility into a Ghani government that was a mirage. It fell immediately. And while the guy sitting next to you was off, you know, talking to Phil Rucker and was off doing his thing with Bob Woodward, we were buying into the big lie. The big lie that this was ever going to be successful and that we could ever rely on the Afghanistan government for anything at all. You know, General Milley, you kind of gave up the game earlier when you said you wanted to address elements of your personal conduct that were in question. We're not questioning your personal conduct. We're questioning in your official capacity going and undermining the chain of command, which is obviously what you did. You've created this whole chain
of communication narrative. Did not undermine the chain of command in
any manner, shape, or form. You absolutely did. And
it, did not.
Well, you know what? You said yesterday that you weren't going to resign when senators asked you this question. And I believe that you guys probably won't resign. You seem to be very happy failing up over there. But if we didn't have a president that was so addled, you all would be fired. Because that is what you deserve. You have let down the people who wear the uniform in my district and all around this country. And you're far more interested in what you're perception is and how people think about you in insider Washington books than you care about winning,
Gentleman's
which this group
has
is incapable
expired.
Of doing.
That Q&A that took place between Gates and these generals, that was the last of that today, because what you ended up with was Adam Smith, who is the chairman of the House Armed Services Committee. He's a Democrat. What you had was him consistently attempting to rehab these generals and the Secretary of Defense anytime somebody challenged them, came at them, and tried to critique them. Now, Gates lays it on a little bit thick, but I do like that he brings up Mr. Scheller now. Right, the honorable Marine who made his displeasure known publicly and has now been put in the brig and faces really no specific charges. They've given him a psychiatric evaluation. They don't like that he has said things. In many ways, it's reminiscent of how they have locked up J6 rioters and insurrectionists without giving them any charges yet, right? They don't have any access to talk to lawyers or things like that. This is a very interesting time to be in this city, in Washington, D.C., and to be in this city, Charlotte, looking at this city, Washington, D.C., because there are very clear two standards at play here. And if you call out the establishment on their double standard, they will have their...
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
Day. News Talk 1110-993 WBT. It is the Brett Winterbull Show, 704-570-1110. Everything that shouldn't be inflating is inflating. Seriously, everything that should not be inflating is, in fact, inflating. Border Patrol breaks all-time migrant apprehension record in 2021. This being reported out of Eagle Pass, Texas. With less than 48 hours to go in fiscal year 2021, the Border Patrol has already surpassed the total number of migrant apprehensions made in any year along the southwest border since the agency's inception in 1924. A source within Customs and Border Protection notes unofficial apprehension records show more than 1.646 million apprehended for the year as of Wednesday. The total reflects arrests made within the nine Southwest Border Patrol sectors from California to Texas. According to the CBP, the previous record stood since 2000 when 1.643 million were arrested. The source says the final apprehension number will increase by at least 10,000 when the fiscal year officially closes on September 30th and is reported out in mid-October. 1.6 million apprehensions. Let that sink in. Imagine the assets and resources that had to be used for that. Just think, let that just sink in. It's incredible. It's 1.6 million people that just came in. I I look at this and I go, so at what point do we like start actually enforcing? At what point do we actually start enforcing the laws? Oh, Brett, you see, why do you have to be so exclusionary? It's not exclusionary. It's genuinely not exclusionary to point this out. Just to give you a scale, okay? I'm going to give you a scale. Philadelphia has 1.603 million people in it. Phoenix has 1.608, and then if you want to move up from there, you'd have to go into like Houston at 2.3 million. So you're talking Phoenix, Philly, San Antonio. It's unbelievable. That's just the people who have been stopped. We don't know what the number is in terms of the people who have gotten through. It could be 2 million. It could be 2.5 million people. It could be double that number. We don't know. Now that's inflation number one. Inflation number two. Did I just say number? I did. Inflation number two. Heat is on homeowners' wallets as natural gas costs inflate 180% ahead of winter months. Natural gas prices in the United States hit their highest point in 7 years this week, just as the weather is starting to cool off in much of the country. Prices for natural gas are going up. They've risen more than 180% over the last year. Roughly half of U.S. households use natural gas to heat their homes and water, according to the U.S. Energy Information Administration. The skyrocketing prices could especially be problematic if the country gets hit with an early frost or an unseasonably cold temperature before the official start of the winter on December the 21st. If you're worried about the combination of high gas prices and a cold winter, don't read the old farmer's almanac. This year it reads, the winter will be punctuated by positively bone-chilling below-average temperatures across much of the United States. Why does this matter? Well, the surging natural gas prices are due to a combination of factors. Less drilling by U.S. shale producers, supply disruptions following hurricanes, the Gulf of Mexico, and fast-rising demand. So, remember when the administration of Joseph Robinette Biden came into office and declared that they were going to, you know, get rid of the Keystone XL pipeline and they were going to shut this down and shut that down and open the borders and all that kind of stuff? Well, it's all happening. It is all happening. Inflation. We took a call just a couple of days ago from a very nice man who called in and said, why are you not talking about inflation? Inflation is a massive issue. You're seeing it in energy. And remember, natural gas is one of those things that AOC wants to get rid of, that Al Gore wants to get rid of, that Biden and Harris want to get rid of. I don't know what their plan is in terms of heating and warming. I don't know what they're going to try to do to affect that sort of change. I'm not optimistic, though. I don't know. What are we supposed to, TJ, are we supposed to burn logs in our living room? Are we supposed to have fires going in our fireplace? Are we going back to the frontier days where we have to have the fire going all day and we cook over a cast iron pot? The cast iron pot is sitting there and it's cooking our vittles all day long. I don't even know what vittles are, but I imagine they're delish. You're cooking it all day long over that hearth, over that fire. I just want to live in a country that's normal again. And I know that sounds like a weird thing to want. I want a country that's got borders that are respected. I want a country that understands that we can produce our own energy, that we don't have to be beholden to either technocrats and bureaucrats or any of that kind of stuff. But understand this, if you understand nothing else, control is coming and coming hard at you. YouTube has now banned all anti-vax content. Let me say that again because you might not have heard it. YouTube has now banned all anti-vax content. They're taking down several video channels associated with high-profile anti-vax activists, including Joseph Mercola and Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who experts say are partially responsible for helping seed the skepticism that has contributed to slowing vaccination rates across the country. As part of a new set of policies aimed at cutting down on anti-vaccine content on the Google-owned site, YouTube will ban any videos that claim commonly used vaccines approved by health authorities are ineffective or dangerous. The company previously blocked videos that made those claims about coronavirus vaccines, but not ones for other vaccines like measles or chickenpox. Now they're going after that. What happens when the YouTube decides we're not going to put up anything that's got Christian thought? We're not going to put up anything that deals with the Second Amendment. We're not going to put up anything that has to deal with, I mean, you name it. They can shut it down. They can shut it down. You're talking about an operation that streams more than a billion hours worth of content every day. They're going to make this stuff disappear. They're going to make this stuff disappear. And I'm shocked by this. Not really, but I am shocked.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
By this. News Talk 1110 993 WBT. You know what I had to do? I had to come all the way to Washington, D.C. to find a North Carolina sheriff. And I got him here right now. He is Sheriff Sam Page. He is Sheriff Sam Page, and it is wonderful to have you here, sir. Appreciate your service, and so happy to be able to connect with you here in the swamp.
Well, I'm glad to be here, and I hope I make a difference today.
Are you kidding me? I think you're making a difference. This is the story that's not really being told so much, though, and it's the challenge that you all are facing there as sheriffs in an era where there's defunding the police and looking for amnesty deals and things like that. Talk a little bit about the challenges you're facing in Rockingham.
Well, you know, and I have to take you back to last year's, looking at the numbers, is, you know, we didn't see heroin in my community or fentanyl, or definitely didn't see fentanyl, and just until a few years ago, 2-3 years ago. But the increases, I think last year we had 28 fentanyl heroin overdose deaths.
Wow.
And that's why I first went to the border. It was to try to track what's going on. This was 11 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And started going to the border, whether it be Texas or Arizona, to try to understand the drug trade and how it moves to North Carolina, and trying to educate our sheriffs in the state. I'm with the National Sheriffs Association Border Security Committee.
Yes,
but I'm also past president of the North Carolina Sheriffs Association. So when I was the president in 2010, I went out on my own, paid my way, to see what was going on and bring that knowledge back.
What's the biggest challenge you're facing, the biggest hindrance here? Are you getting support from the state? Are you not getting enough support? What's your sense as you look at this challenge in Rockingham?
Well, I've always believed in collaboration, because I know you never have enough officers out there, enough deputies out there. So, you know, I think the biggest thing that I face right now, with the more calls for service that draws that on law enforcement here and the sheriff's office, that I need additional manpower. But then you start adding on situations like, for example, in the 90s, up until about the 90s, late 90s, you know, when you call for an ambulance, the ambulance responded. When you call for a fire truck, they responded. Now we respond with them because they don't know what they're running into, because it could be an overdose situation, somebody's violent, mm-hmm. or other situations. So we're adding more calls for service. I think last year was about 40,000 calls for service last year, and we're a small agency, 92,000 population.
Wow.
I'm responsible for about 55,000 population out in the county areas, and then I have about 8 to 10 deputies working on a shift. So we stay busy. We're a full-service law enforcement agency, but just the demands. And then, of course, you throw in COVID, and then you throw in civil disorder and those conversations, because it's in Greensboro, it's in Charlotte, it's in Raleigh, yep. it's all around. And to me, that didn't just happen. That was a concerted effort.
This is the real problem. Sheriff Sam Page joining us here from Rockingham, North Carolina. Here's the thing. When I look at this situation, we're seeing a record number crossing the border being detained. 1.6 million, the number comes out today, that have been detained down at the border.
Temporarily detained. Catch and release is what he called it.
Right. And so what you now have is you have the federal government basically kind of doing a shell game where they move people around, they drop them off in communities. Are you seeing that sort of thing in Rockingham?
They're not being honest with the American people.
Mm-hmm.
Transparency, trust, accountability. That's the problem. What we're seeing with the administration and the government is not being honest with American people. Public safety is not about politics. It's about protecting lives. And if you put politics above that, it's a dangerous proposition. What comes to the border doesn't stay there. In 2 days, it's in Rockingham County, North Carolina. It's in Charlotte.
Yep.
I will tell you this. I was down in Arizona in June, and I made a comment on Fox. I said, you know what I'm seeing now, the connection with us in Arizona is we both have coyotes, and we both have Mexican drug cartels in our community.
Yeah.
Now, that being said, a little over a year ago, they arrested four members of the Jalisco cartel in Axton, Virginia, which is 5 minutes north of the town where I live in North Carolina.
Wow.
Right on the border. And they had been operating, I think they said, about 3 or 4 years. According to DEA, I think they said operating 3 or 4 years, moving drugs in eastern Virginia, northern Virginia. Well, 4 days later, they arrested 10 Jalisco cartel members in Charlotte, and they were connected between, I don't know if you remember that, but they were connected between Charlotte and California. Mm-hmm. So the cartels, the MS-13, the other gangs, the criminal elements are coming in with the persons that are coming in illegally, embedding and also victimizing a lot of these people in their own communities.
So I don't mean to turn sheriff on sheriff here for a quick second, but we have a sheriff in Mecklenburg County, Sheriff McFadden,
yes,
who doesn't want to honor detainers, doesn't want to do that sort of stuff. What about that challenge that you face in terms of the detainers and working with the federal government?
It's no challenge. We honor detainers.
Yeah.
And to, if you want to protect, let me tell you this.
Yes, sir.
You know the numbers. I can't tell you the numbers, but you know that probably have seen the numbers of how many people have been released in the Mecklenburg area and persons have re-victimized persons.
Yes.
A lot of those crimes are preventable. But the key thing is if you come to America and you're here illegally, you're violating the laws. If you're removed and come back again, it's a felony and it's a violation of laws. There's no respect right now for, first of all, we've got to honor the rule of law, and
yep,
it doesn't seem to be a respect for our laws here in our communities, in our country. But the thing is the persons that when they leave there, a lot of times, like I said, they can go to other places, but a lot of times they re-victimize mm-hmm. people in their own community. So the thing is, with the detainers, that's the best way that we found to protect our citizens. Now, I think it was March 2020, about time of the lockdown, that's when we brought the Warrant Service Officer Program, part of 287G. We were the first county in the state of North Carolina,
mm-hmm.
but I think now there's like probably 30-some counties in North Carolina that adopted that, down in Florida and maybe some other place around the country. But that was a way where when a person is in our country, violates our laws, particularly in North Carolina, and is arrested, and it's determined that person's not native-born,
mm-hmm.
then we notify ICE. ICE does their program, their interviews.
Right.
If they issue a detainer, then what happens is that we honor the detainer. When they're released, when it's time for them to be released, then we contact ICE and say, you got 48 hours, come pick them up. And that is the most safest, best way, and efficient way to deal with persons that are involved in criminal activity in our communities or illegally in our country. I don't understand why. Well, again, to get back to the politics, it's not about politics. It's
sure.
about protecting
right.
the American people and protecting our communities, and protecting the immigrant population.
Absolutely.
Because a lot of times they're victimized, these people, when they get out. If we don't honor detainers, like you've seen, look how many people are victimized and re-victimized
right.
when they're released.
Final question for you. Did you ever think, when you first got into law enforcement, did you ever think you'd get to a place now where you all are now really the firewall? The sheriffs are the firewall. It's not necessarily the big city police departments or the feds. It's the sheriffs.
Well, as long as I've been sheriff, and I've been sheriff for 23 years, I'm getting ready for my seventh term, my seventh term. We've always pushed out working with state, local, federal. We never have enough people. So having that collaboration and that cooperation is a force multiplier. We participate in task force, DA task force, mm-hmm. HSI task force. We've shown that if we work together like that, we can make a difference. Now, kudos to the guys in Border Patrol. You're doing a good job.
Yeah.
We appreciate you. We love you. We care about you. ICE agents, you're doing a great job. We appreciate you. The DPS, Department of Public Safety in Texas, doing a great job. The thing about it is this administration needs to respect those people because they're doing a job. They're helping to protect America and the American people, and that's something that they need to realize. That's what we got to do to protect our country. Before we can have any discussion on immigration reform, we've got to have operational border security
yep.
first.
Absolutely.
Then we can talk about fixing our immigration system.
Terrific. So happy to catch up with you, Sheriff Sam Page out of Rockingham. Where do people get more information on what it is that you're up to?
Well, you know, we have a website, rockinghamsheriff.com.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to go to our website, I do a podcast every month. We're on 7 different platforms. We put the information out. I try to make sure that we are transparent, make sure we get the information out to the citizens, and make sure they're well-informed. Everything you see on TV,
yes, sir.
You know, is not always the way it is. Yeah. But I think when you hear it from your sheriffs, and that's the thing about it, when you hear it from your local law enforcement, I think it makes a difference. But again, like I said, listen to what we're doing. Continue to support law enforcement and our first responders across this country, across our state. And again, we just appreciate you.
Our best to your men and women that are serving in the community, sir.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
What the heck is wrong with Australia? Can anybody tell me what is wrong with Australia these days? I know that they've got these weird mask mandates and they're tackling people in the street and they got the cops like shooting the beanbag guns at them and all that kind of stuff. But what about this? What about this? There's an Australian amusement park. Now, TJ, I don't know if you would go in on this. I don't know that I would go in on this either. You must be this thin to ride. An Australian amusement park is being accused of fat-shaming visitors after imposing a new guest-weighing policy that bars people from rides for being too heavy. The park doesn't cater to us anymore, one incensed former park goer told the Aussie station 7 News of the questionable new measure, which was implemented by Adventure World in Perth after it opened on Saturday. Oh, that's right, because it's like summertime down there now. And the toilets all flush backwards. The theme park had reportedly started posting weight limits for their rides, which they enforced by equipping attractions with self-serve weighing stations that flash green or red depending on whether or not you meet the standard. One visitor said her 13-year-old daughter was left humiliated after stepping on the scale at the Rocky Rapid water slide and discovering she exceeded the limit. Yeah, but if you're in the water, isn't that like buoyancy? Don't you have buoyancy if you're bigger? Isn't bigger better? Aren't you a bigger, better barge? Build back better?
I float pretty well.
Are you a floater?
Big guy.
I'm not big on floaters normally, but this I'll look at. My eldest daughter took my youngest daughter, who has, she has special needs. That's not, come on now. Let's unjoke that. So once at the top, she stopped and asked to stand on the weighing machine, and the lights flickered green and then red and then green again. That's not, okay. First of all, if they go green, then red, then green, then you're in the clear. It's obviously a malfunctioning machine. The distraught mom said the operator walked to the electrical box and looked inside it and came back and said, you weigh this amount, you can't go down. So what do you do? Wait, if you go to the top of the slide and then you weigh too much, do you have to do the, have you ever gone on one of those rides where like you're not, you lose your courage at the top of the ride and you're like, okay, I can't, I'm going to go down, and you got to do the walk of shame?
Oh, luckily, no.
I have done that.
Oh.
I have gone to the top of the ride, looked and said, you know what? I just don't think I need to do the jetpack ride today or whatever it was. No, you know what it was? It was one of those, it was like a bungee thing, but I had eaten nachos.
That's a fair excuse.
And I was like, you know, I do not want to be a guy who launches nachos all over unsuspecting fairgoers.
Everyone in the park thanked you that day.
Well, they didn't know, but I got booed. I was like walking down and they were like,
you got booed? Oh,
jump.
Man.
You need to jump. I'm like, I'm not jumping. I told you, I'm filled with nachos. I am nacho full. I did see a guy, though. Believe me, I'm going to get back to the story. I have not lost my train of thought by any stretch. I did see a guy come down, and when he came down, he had coins in his pockets, and then he didn't. He made it rain. It was that, or it was tokens. It might have been like game tokens in his pockets, and they all flew out. So, critics found the weight limit itself ludicrous, as certain attractions prohibit patrons from exceeding 1,300 pounds for every 8 people. That means the average weight of a person riding these rides has to be 165 pounds. Although I think it's less when you do the metrics into Australia. I think when you do that, the number is different. So they're weighing you to go down. Now they're going to do this on airplanes too. You know, they're going to do this on airplanes. I told the story. I think I told it last summer. I was getting on an airplane with my luggage, and the guy said to me, "Your bag is too heavy." And I said, "Okay." And he said, "It's going to be $165 to take your bag." And he said to me, "Do you want to take some of the weight out of the bag?" And I said, "And do what?" And he said, "Well, you can wear a lot of layers of clothes." And I said to the guy, "But aren't we putting the same amount of weight in the plane? Like, if I wear 7 sweaters and 4 pairs of socks, they're still in the plane. They're just not in a bag." And he told me that that was not his problem. And he charged me $165 for our bag to go. And do you know what they did with the bag? They put these stickers all over it that said "very heavy bag." Like that was going to humiliate us into not like taking our bag on the plane. And that's the last time I ever check a kid. No, I'm kidding. No, but that's the last time I ever check heavy stuff in a. I knew we shouldn't have taken gold bricks on the airplane. I mean, that's you don't want to do that. You don't want to check it. But they asked me. They said, put on, no, just put it on. Just put the clothing on. And I said, but it's all the same amount of weight on the plane. And they said it's because the union rules that they don't want guys blowing out their backs moving 160 pounds or whatever it was. It was like 78 pounds, and it was supposed to be 75. And they didn't want the people who take the bags. The reason why I packed it so heavy is I knew it would be harder to steal, and I could catch the guy if he grabbed it. Because that happens on the carousel sometimes. You see the guy grabs your bag, and he goes to take off, and now it's Katie bar the door. All right, so coming up in this next hour, I'm here in Washington, D.C. The sun is hitting the Capitol Dome. I don't know what is hitting the fan inside the Capitol Dome, but we'll try to assess that and find out what it is that's going on there in terms of this fight for the $3.5 trillion. That really, once again, ladies and gentlemen, let me just restate this. It really is zero. It's $3.5 trillion, but it's actually zero because we're going to make up for it. It's like the old trick. Here's what you want to do. You want to buy yourself a fancy sports car, and you want to tell your spouse it's cool. Don't worry about it. You just saved $25,000 because it was marked down. And then you say to the spouse, but we still paid for the car. That doesn't matter. It's free. It's zero. It is zero. The car is not that expensive. You need to splurge the $3.5 trillion for money going into every kind of FACACTA program that there is under the sun. That doesn't matter. It's all free. Everything is free. It's zero. Zero, my hero. I remember that from the old days of Saturday morning TV. 704-570-1110, News Talk 1110, 99.3 WBT.
Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
Hour number three of the Brett Winterbull Show now underway. 704-570-1110 live from Washington, D.C. I'm in the swamp. I'm right across from the swamp. There's lots of swampiness going on here. It is great to be here with each and every one of you. Later this hour, we're going to be joined by Bo Thompson. We're also going to be joined by a special guest who is just back from Del Rio. He spent 8 days down there, and we'll get his thoughts on what it is that's happening down there at the site of the former Bidenville. And we'll check in with Mark Garrison later in the hour. But first, I want to jump into a couple other stories that are, you know, sort of more conventional. It's not necessarily connected directly to the immigration issue that we're covering today and tomorrow. Let me go to this for a quick second. For those of you who are into the way, 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 way too early ebbs and flows of the upcoming elections, former President Donald Trump and Florida Governor Ron DeSantis are in a virtual tie for the 2024 Republican nomination for the country's highest office. That, according to a poll commissioned by a super PAC run by Trump national security advisor turned critic John Bolton. Trump leads DeSantis 26.2 to 25.2 in a survey of 1,000 likely voters done by Carter Wren on behalf of John Bolton's super PAC. How does John Bolton get a super PAC? The organization posted on its website, this is being reported via Newsmax, the survey delineated the voters as very conservative, somewhat conservative, and moderate primary voters. Former U.S. Attorney and New Jersey Governor Chris Christie was a distant third with 7%, Nikki Haley 6%, Ted Cruz 4.7%, South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem 3%, Mike Pence, 2.6%, Tim Scott, 2.3%, Marco Rubio, 2.3%, Josh Hawley, 1.3%. You know, I'm surprised that Tom Cotton hasn't shown up in that poll, in all seriousness. I would have thought maybe he'd be in that running. Bolton is widely regarded as hawkish. Reports say he and Trump split over differing approaches to Afghanistan. Bolton said in the new poll showed a 20% drop for his former boss compared to a similar survey in July. Okay. I got it. So this is one of those spite polls. This is one of those almost like a push poll where you ask a bunch of tough questions and you try to get the result that you want to get. But it is interesting, nevertheless. I think that the numbers are awfully light, though, with DeSantis. I think DeSantis is more popular. Maybe not as popular, but I think he's a little bit more popular. I think both those numbers, like I said, I think that they both feel very, very light to me. Coming back to North Carolina, News and Observer with this piece, how much will teachers and state employees get for raises and bonuses? Well, here are some of the options they note in this piece. They look at the breakdown of this. It's the latest version of the budget bill, Senate Bill 105, which will pay out bonuses by October 31st if it becomes law. Billions of dollars in surplus and an influx of federal money means the state is flush as it plans its financial future for the next 2 years. The proposed House budget would give teachers raises of an average of about 4% the first year, 5.5% combined over 2 years. The House proposal emphasizes raises for veteran teachers in North Carolina. The Senate would give teachers an average of 3% raises over 2 years. The governor proposed an average teacher raise of 10% over the next 2 years. That's 5% a year. Are you doing well enough in your line of work that you're getting a 5% raise over the next 2 years? 5% and then 5%, a 10% total raise? I'd like to know from your business perspective, is that what's happening? The Senate proposed 3% raises over 2 years for most state employees as well as teachers. The Senate wants an average raise of 7% for corrections officers, who would also get a newly created salary schedule based on experience. Bonuses would come in for teachers, principals, and COVID-19 workers. You mean like the COVID-19 workers you just fired? That you're firing from Novant? The 175, is that who we're talking about? The governor's budget, House budget, and Senate budget all include significant bonuses for state workers. The General Assembly's bonus plans also spend federal dollars on bonuses for those who worked in person during the pandemic. In the Senate budget, state employees who earn less than $75,000 a year would get $1,500. Those who make more than $75,000 would receive $1,000 in bonuses. There would also be bonuses of $1,500 for law enforcement, correctional officers, and staff and employees of 24-hour residential and treatment facilities. Additional bonuses across the board would go to teachers who would get $300 and principals who'd get $1,800. Whoa, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Hold on. Who's in the front lines there? Who's in the front lines? Is it the principal that's in the front lines getting $1,800? Or is it the teacher that's in the front lines getting that kind of cash? How much money are we talking about here? Why is the principal getting more coin? I mean, I think if you're gonna hash it out from teacher and principal, I think teacher gets more money. I think principal gets less money. That's all I'm telling you here, folks. I think that's essentially what it comes down to. I think the teachers need they're the front line peeps. The House budget proposed that some state employees and local education employees at risk of COVID-19 exposure while working during the pandemic will get $500 bonuses. Man, you can really cash in here. TJ, we may need a best of. I think I'm going to go get my teaching license and cash in on some. Oh, well, no. See, I didn't do the work yet. Darn it. Cooper's budget proposal would also give $2,000 for teachers, principals, and all public school personnel this fiscal year. Another $1,000. So this is, they're in the money. Why aren't you doing a rainy day fund? You're going to have a rainy day come upon you one of these days. Why are we shoveling all the money out? And I'm serious. I'm not holding it against teachers or principals or $75,000 and up or $75,000 and under. I'm not doing that. But if you've got all this money rolling in, why do you suddenly have to go buy a brand new car and a couch and some fancy shoes? I think what you do is you keep that money in reserve because there may be a crisis that comes around. Just inflation alone, just the fact that you're paying $40 for two slabs of spare ribs. How about we get that action happening? How about we get some aid as it relates to inflationary food costs? That would be quite something, wouldn't it? But you know what's going to happen, folks? They're going to spend it. And no matter who it is that you're talking about, whether you're talking about the Republicans or the Democrats, they're going to take care of their peeps. That's a fact. You can bank on that. All right, coming up, we're going to have our good friend Bo Thompson come by. We're going to cross the streams. That means Huey Lewis and the news music is going to be heard in a matter of moments. But first, ladies and gentlemen, approaching the microphone. Boomer Von Kenton. Boomer?
Yes.
Tell me about the roads right up here in D.C. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, really? The belt line.
The velvet, the
that
belt
line's way too tight for me, baby.
Man, are you kidding me? I'm wearing a muumuu.
Man, I left a Redskins game up there about 10 years ago, 20 years ago.
Yeah?
And there was a wreck on the belt line. We spent 5 hours getting to Arlington from the stadium.
Get out of here.
5 hours on the belt line. Oh, yeah.
You could have. Could have walked it
backwards with my hands tied behind my back. But 5 hours.
Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
News Talk 1110 993 WBT. Brett Winterbull alongside my good friend Bo Thompson as we cross the streams like we do every day at this time. Good to have you back, Bo Thompson.
Boy, if I was alongside you physically right now, I'd have quite the view, wouldn't I?
You sure would. I know I keep talking about it. I just sent you a snapshot of this, but like I'm maybe two and a half, three football fields from the Capitol Dome. We've got the best spot in the entire radio row here at Fair, so it's we got lucky with our positioning for sure.
Yeah, you did, and I'm looking at the picture as I speak to you. You just texted it to me, and you know it when you see the Sunday shows or whatever the Washington bureaus are for all these various networks. You know,
I mean,
it's a great-looking view, but you know that it's a backdrop. It's a fake backdrop. What
right. You
are looking at right now looks like one of those TV sets. I mean, but it's the real deal. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's funny. We're in the building, 400 North Capitol, so it's NBC is here, Fox News is here, C-SPAN is here, and I can see the array of stands that are on the next building over that they use for the shot of the Capitol when they do their live shots. So
I know sometimes they're real shots, but what my point is, as you know, it's like when they go to take a picture for anywhere in the country that they want to use as the green screen backdrop. That's what you got right now.
Yeah, that's right. I put it out on Twitter. People can see it. So we got lucky. The weather is good. It's not too hot. It's not too cold. And certainly a lot of big stories moving in D.C. So we're lucky to be here.
Well, hey, you know, D.C. is always hopping, but when Brett Winterbull's in town, it's just double hopping.
No, it's not the case. It is less hopping when I'm here. Hey, let's pick up a piece from yesterday and really the day before. We've been talking about this. The NBA getting much more aggressive, now saying no pay for players who miss games because of local vaccine mandates. I'm trying to think. I know Toronto's got a mandate. Is it New York's got one and maybe L.A.? I don't know what other cities do, though, but they're going to be missing out on paychecks.
Yeah, any player who elects not to comply with local vaccination mandates will not be paid for games that they miss. So going to be interesting to see on several levels. I mean, first and foremost, will other leagues follow suit with what the NBA is doing? You and I talked yesterday about how LeBron James, the face of the league, came out and said that I got vaccinated. So I guess not surprising that this news comes out the next day. It's probably not coincidence there when the main man says that. But I'm more interested in this. I mean, there will be pushback. I mean, Kyrie Irving, who plays for the Brooklyn Nets, almost every day has a reason why he's not coming to practice, or, you know, he'll go out and not play for stretches for, you know, personal reasons. As far as I know, he's unvaccinated or appears to be unvaccinated. So we'll see what happens when some of these players start getting docked pay for non-compliance. And, this is all not just basketball, but basketball obviously is kind of front and center and in the media spotlight. So
it does make you wonder how much will you have to be docked before you notice it. You know what I'm saying? Because it's like these are big giant contracts, and it may take a minute to get there. Speaking of vaccinations and the stuff, you see this story we were talking about earlier. YouTube is banning prominent anti-vaccine activists and blocking all anti-vaccine content. That's not just COVID-19 vaccines. We're talking, you know, measles, mumps, rubella, the flu. If you're negative on vaccines, they're gonna block you from the platform.
Yeah, YouTube again, I go back to the same sort of example. You know, LeBron James and the NBA come out pro-vaccine and announce a policy about players that are unvaccinated. I wonder if YouTube will inspire Facebook and Twitter and some of these social media outlets to do what they did with. I mean, obviously Trump ultimately got banned, but you wonder if this will become the type of thing that gets, you know, tagged with a disclaimer when you talk
right.
about if you're anti-vax or you say things about the vaccinations. That again, I'm more look at this. I mean, YouTube bans things all the time, and for various reasons. But to me, it's what does this inspire from some of these other social media sites that I wonder if they'll follow suit.
Then again, isn't everybody just on TikTok now? And I mean, are people still going on YouTube? I mean, I thought everything was on TikTok now.
Well, you tell me. Did you just post your picturesque Washington backdrop on TikTok?
I didn't. I put it on Twitter. So, you know, that's it. It's on the Twitter. It's on the Twitter.
On the Twitter.
It's on the Twitter. The question I have for you, though, is this, my friend. We're looking at record low approval numbers from the Biden administration. Immigration is one of the issues, or an unsecure border is one of the issues. Afghanistan is one of the issues. To quote the Limbo song, how low can he go, Bo Thompson?
I don't know. I think, first of all, I heard you talking about this earlier. Who did this poll?
The approval numbers that Biden's got, they are, the poll is out of ABC News Ipsos.
Okay. So
ABC News Ipsos.
I guess, again, I seem to be on a theme today, but this is ABC News, and generally when you see these polls, these approval number polls, they seem to kind of branch out over a 2 or 3 day period where you'll see NBC's and you'll see CBS's and Fox's.
That's right.
And I'm wondering what the comparison numbers will be. If they're all in that general area, and even if they're not, I mean, I'm not knocking ABC as a legit
sure.
poll, but if you start seeing numbers across the board that indicate that, boy, that's going to be interesting to see what the fallout from that's going to be.
He's 252 days into the presidency. He's got a 33% approval on immigration and the border. He's got a 38% approval on gun violence and 38% on Afghanistan. So depending on how he disposes of those issues, he's going to make up some more ground. But I often find it's very difficult to make substantial ground up unless you do something, you know, spectacular.
And I was listening to your last segment, and you were talking about, I don't know if this is a related poll, or I can't remember who you said it was, but when you're talking about the presidential hopefuls and,
yes.
And Trump,
that's the John Bolton poll.
That Tim Scott was as far down on that list as you
see?
Said was.
I was too. And it's actually John Bolton commissioned the poll, and
okay.
We know, you know, he doesn't
the room, and I didn't hear that part, but
he doesn't like Trump, but yeah. it's still a poll. I mean, he's just out there surveying right. people. So you have Trump at like 26, and you've got DeSantis at like 25, and then everybody down from there. I mean, Pence is at 2.3%. So it's like you can kind of pick your poison, moving your way all the way down that list. I was surprised Tom Cotton's not in the conversation. I was surprised Kristi Noem's numbers are as low as they would be. But then again, we are 252 days into this new presidency. It's a long way to go before we get to 24.
I was also surprised. I think I heard you say that Chris Christie was
yes.
third and mm-hmm. ahead of Nikki Haley.
Yes. Yes. El Cristo. You
yeah,
know?
I mean, to me, I haven't heard that much buzz about Chris Christie. That I'm not surprised he's on the list.
Yeah.
I'm surprised he's where he is, and he's higher than Nikki Haley. I think, you know, Nikki Haley and Tim Scott, you know, both from South Carolina, I would have thought would have been closer to the top.
Do you think Chris should call himself Christy Cream?
If he does, remember where you heard the phrase coined.
All right. And finally, what do we have coming up tomorrow on The Big Shoe?
Okay, I was tweeting about this earlier. Tomorrow, one day only, the return of Governor Pat McCrory to the show. He'll be
crowd goes
well. Co-host from 8 to 10, so who knows what we will get into in the two-hour period, but the Gov will be back in the house.
Will you play Baby, You're a Rich Man?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Will you play Bee Gees?
Yes, because you know why? Because I know that's the one day I have to play it. You know, if I have to play it one day out of like every 2 months, that's so much. That's much better than the BG quota that I had before.
Can we expect a big finish?
I don't know.
Ooh.
We've talked. Here's what we've talked about. We've talked about a top five. We've talked about possibly he's going to try to rustle up David from Asheville, and who knows? The callers determine whether there's a big finish. So we'll see.
Good stuff, Bo Thompson. Mandatory listening. I'll be back with you tomorrow too. I'll be jumping on the transom. All right, my friend. Enjoy your evening, and we'll pick it up in the morning, my friend.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
News Talk 1110-993 WBT. Happy to welcome to the show Todd Bensman, who's with the Center for Immigration Studies. He's the center's Texas-based National Security Fellow. The author of America's Covert Border War, The Untold Story of the Nations. Let me welcome him into the program here. So, Todd, my understanding is you just got back from 8 days down in Del Rio. Welcome to the show here in Charlotte. What happened? What did you see?
Well, it's good to be back in civilization. It was hot and crazy down there. It was third world refugee camp stuff. I mean, it was right out of the African, war refugee camp playbook, Hollywood could have created something like this with, thatched, dwellings and tar paper and blankets over the over roofs and some, tents and people sleeping on the ground and wailing babies and a terrible stench, that sort of a thing,
and about 100 degrees too, right?
It was hot. Yeah, I mean, it couldn't have been. I think it was worse than that, than 100 degrees, but it felt like it anyway. And you just don't see things like this in the mass migration crisis. It's usually moves through pretty quickly. It doesn't pool up like this. And I'm pretty sure that this is probably the first time in U.S. history that we've actually had a big migrant camp like this form that big and that quickly.
When you look at what it is that happened, because obviously there was a lot of pressure on the administration to get in there and to get a hold of this one way or another. And so it seems to me that they went in there, they obviously... They pulled out a couple of thousand people that they said they deported or returned to Haiti or to other nations in South America. But this is a Bidenville that has now disappeared. But we know that down in Tapachula, Mexico, down by the Guatemalan border, is a great likelihood that there's another 20 or 30,000 people that are going to make the way up, because those folks that have been released into the general population of the United States or into detention facilities for the time being are obviously all communicating over Telegram and WhatsApp and that sort of stuff, telling people, come on up, they'll lock you up for a couple of days, and then you're free to go.
That's exactly the way it works. That is the propulsion. That is the fuel that that lights the jets on this, is the people who go first and get in. And the Biden administration's big mistake with their big policy mistake was to let that happen as broadly and vastly and numerically huge as they have. That is why you have large numbers of people from around the entire globe on their way here through the Darien Gap jungle. Mm-hmm. Panama, that area down there is where the Haitians all came through. Mm-hmm. And there are more people coming through the Darien Gap now than in anybody's living memory. It is massive, and it's been happening for, I've been writing about that for, 10 months straight, almost a year.
That's
been happening.
Let me ask you this, Todd Bensman joining us here from Center for Immigration Studies. When you look at what's going on in Texas, Texas appears to be especially targeted for the crossings. You know, we know that they've allegedly detained 1.6 million people. I'd be willing to bet that the overwhelming majority have come through Texas. You're not hearing about it in New Mexico or Arizona or California. Is it your sense, and it certainly is my sense, because I grew up in far west Texas in El Paso, and it's my sense that this administration is specifically punishing the state of Texas. Is that a bridge too far?
I think so. I think that the way that migration patterns flow, water takes the path of least resistance.
Mm-hmm.
It's usually about the cost. The availability of smuggling plazas over which you can cross, and also that there is a there's an economy about it, right? That really drives everything. And the reason people, for example, came through Del Rio is because it's free to cross there. It's one of the few places on the border. They discovered about 6 months ago that it was free to cross there, and it was $5,000 a head to cross further south in Texas.
Wow.
So that's why this camp formed up. The numbers that have been coming through Del Rio had been on the sharp rise since at least February and March. So and then the other thing is that in California, you don't see this sort of thing because California has really significant walling and fencing. And so does a bunch of New Mexico. And where it's not walled in New Mexico, it's like this vast wilderness, you know. Mm-hmm, so there's not a whole lot of infrastructure. South Texas has a lot of infrastructure immediately on the border. You could get lost in a big hurry down there into a stash house. And those are the kind of things that I think drive it more than anything, where smugglers target for crossings and where immigrants target for crossings as well.
We appreciate you sharing your information with us. I think this is the first of what will be many conversations as we move through this saga. Todd Bensman from CIS, appreciate you coming by today on the program and sharing your information. Thank you so much.
Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, our hands sprawl from the Potomac to the Catawba. I just break in character now.
Yeah,
What's wrong with me?
I like it.
Garrison.
How are you?
It's wonderful to be visiting with you, my friend.
So you got a big expense account dinner in D.C. tonight? Yeah.
There's no expense. I'm not a lobbyist. If I were a lobbyist, I'd be able to make big cash. I'll have probably some of those weenies wrapped in the, when you get the little short weenies and you wrap them in the croissants, the croissant weenies.
A convenience store crunch. Yeah.
You know, I get... Get one of those.
Yeah, all right.
It's good to be with you, my friend.
Well, thank you.
You know, I came all the way to D.C. to meet the sheriff from Rockingham.
Really?
Yeah, he was on with me.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
It's kind of cool.
Yeah.
I mean, a little taste of home. So what do we got coming up on Charlotte at 6, Mark?
Well, 6:05, we've got an exclusive that should calm some panicky pandemic parents. Brett Jensen's got the COVID count from Charlotte-Mecklenburg schools. Not many kids or teachers getting the virus in the classroom. That's good news.
What?
Yeah. Numbers are intensely small. You won't believe how small. Coming up at 6:20, we'll tell you how this sounds. That little clicker could save a life, developed by a Charlotte man. It's a fascinating story.
Wow, that's cool.
Dog the Bounty Hunter is getting involved in the case trying to find Brian Laundrie, wanted for questioning in his girlfriend's murder. And Dog says he may be in North Carolina, near Boone.
Oh, whoa, really?
Yeah.
If Dog shows up at your door, you're nervous.
Yeah, really?
You're nervous.
If you look at that through the peephole, it's like, whoa, who is that guy?
Has he got the reflective sunglasses on when he's looking at the people? That's it.
Now, you mentioned the Catawba River. Interesting that you did. At 6:35, we'll dive into the Catawba. PBS Charlotte has come up with a fascinating documentary about the old river, and there's a whole town buried underwater, and we'll hear about it.
Really?
That. Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Can we dive for treasure?
Well, horseshoes. Yeah, I think.
Horseshoes? I'm in.
They found old horseshoes and all kinds of stuff from the old town. So.
Holy cow, that's actually really cool. I love stuff like that. That to me is fascinating. Well, you know what? I'm going to be listening on the app.
All right. Well, behave yourself here in D.C. tonight.
There's nothing. What am I going to do here? I'm just
kidding?
Waiting for
that
them.
Town's just full of trouble.
$3.5 trillion worth.
Yeah.
So, that's right. All right. I'm going to grab one of these beanie weenies and a mushroom stuffed something and some Boursin cheese or something.
I'll just go eat a steak and bill the company for it.
No, I don't have those privileges. Well, that's the problem.
That's the problem.
I got some dry snack ramen.
Okay.
I'll just crunch it.
All right, there you go.
I'll talk to you later. Right, that's Mark Garrison, Charlotte at 6. Mandatory listening. I'm serious. That is, I used to never be a river guy, and now after living here, okay, I'm in D.C., but let's say the here of Charlotte, I am endlessly fascinated with rivers and lakes. I was never like a river lake guy. I know it sounds weird. You would think I'd be a river lake guy, but I've never really been one. But now I'm endlessly fascinated. The only thing I'm afraid of is I keep flashing back. Remember, TJ, remember on Friday when we had the caller who was the naturalist or the naturist? I always forget what that is. The wildlife biologist. I think the naturalist is guy who runs around naked.
Yeah, that's a naked person.
I don't need naked people. But I don't like snakes. Like, I don't want to be in a river when there's snakes out there coming at me. Like, I don't need a cottonmouth coming at me.
Especially not a ball of snakes.
I don't want to. No. Who wants? You find me a guy that likes snake balls, and I don't know what that's all about. That just feels like a recipe for disaster. You're on a float. I'm on a raft. You know what we do, TJ? We take some logs, and we take some stripling, and we make like a raft, and we go down the river standing up. We just pretend like it's the old days.
We can whistle.
We could whittle. Think about it. We can whittle and whistle.
Yeah.
We can whittle and whistle while we work. What was, in all seriousness, you know, you think back to like those old days when they used to use those river deals like that, those rafts. How do you steer them? You just have a long pole. Is that what it is? So you just kind of
just blind luck.
My gosh.
You go where the river takes you.
You go where the river goes. It's going to take you into a spot with a bunch of snakes. And that's no good. Because now what are you doing? There's a problem.
Going with the flow.
I like nature. I like nature from inside of a pontoon boat.
Yes.
Safely in the dead center of the river where I can't be harassed or harmed. That's I'm being honest. I'm sharing. The audience may not like it. There's this little article, and I'm going to get into this more tomorrow with some of our great guests that we got coming up. White House struggles to define Kamala Harris's border czar role. Hold on. If you're the border czar, it's the whole kit and caboodle, isn't it? I mean, if you're the border czar, it means you're the boss. It means you're in charge of everything. You're not in charge of some things. Like, you don't get to say, I'm in charge of the parts that are successful, but I'm not in charge of the parts that are failing. The White House is struggling to define Vice President Kamala Harris's border czar role as the immigration crisis at the U.S.-Mexico border continues to worsen. President Joe Biden tapped Harris to handle the border issue in March and since then has argued that the only way to reduce illegal immigration is to address its root causes, namely poverty and violence in Central and South America. We can't even address poverty and violence in our cities. We're going to do Central and South America? It seems to me that migrants are actually addressing the issue of poverty and violence. They're leaving and coming up here. Her first attempt to address the crisis with a trip to Guatemala and Mexico was met with widespread criticism from Republicans and some fellow Democrats. Her last major action with respect to immigration came with the unveiling of a strategy to address illegal immigration in late July. In Central America, the root causes of migration run deep. Migration from the region has a direct impact on the United States. Okay, so we know all this. So how are you going to redefine what her role is? She could give a big speech, I guess. 6 months into her appointment, we have a humanitarian security crisis at the border with no leadership from the official tasked with stemming the migration of immigrants across our border, said Kevin McCarthy, Republican from California. We're going to stay on this story because this is obviously going to be a pivot. They're going to try to make her the person that's going to get all the attention because what do you have happening now? Now, all of a sudden, the Haitian issue is showing up. They've got to look like they're dialed in and they're on board with this. I don't know how you fix this. I think the damage has been done. When President Obama comes out and says, essentially, you can't have open borders, Joe, the damage has been done. That's a big problem. All right, that's going to do it for me. I want to thank TJ and Josh and Anna and Boomer and Bo and Mark Garrison and each and every one of you. And we're going to get together again tomorrow starting at 3. Coming up next, you're going to find out about the Catawba River and what's in there. Be nice. Be good for Mark Garrison. I'll talk to you tomorrow starting at 3. News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT.